Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Spiritual Unity Radio Network, a station dedicated to the concept that all manifestations of the divine are equally valid. Join Reverend Terry Power HP, Lord Onyx, and all the hosts 7 nights a week for programming covering a wide range of spiritual topics right here on Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Soapbox Witch with Onyx. You had a choice and you chose to spend your time here. Thank you for joining me on this magical journey of thought seed farming and music. Hello and welcome to the Soapbox Witch. My name is Reverend Onyx and I'm your host. I want to thank you all for tuning in. Whether you're with me in the Blog Talk Radio chat room, listening live through another portal, or in the archives later, I know that you had a choice and that you chose to spend time with me. Thank you. Before I get into tonight's topic, I'd like to make an announcement for a local group. When I say local, here in the Triad area of North Carolina, Path of the Moon Collective is hosting its first Earth Path Pride Day. This pagan-centered celebration of Mother Earth will take place on Saturday, April 11th, in Yesterday Village, which is a part of the Dixie Classic Fairgrounds in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. This family-friendly event will feature vendors, a raffle, community drum circle, music, entertainment, a kilt community earth altar, and more. Admission and parking are free. Gates open at 11 a.m. and close at 8 p.m. For a schedule of events and directions, visit http://, just like you would normally do it, POTMC, that's Path of the Moon Collective, POTMC.weebly.com, or you can find Earth Path Pride Day event on Facebook or on Witchbox. If you're in the local area, I invite you to come out and enjoy the festivities. So tonight, we're talking about druids. Who they're not. Who they were, who they were not. Druids are always popular, at least here lately, it seems. But what do we know about them in a historical sense? Who were they? Who are they? In this episode, I'll try to answer these questions and more. I want to thank you for joining. Talk about druidry. We're venturing in very murky waters. There's a ton of evidence for the existence of druids among the ancient Celts. However, their actual practices are very documented. Many will claim that there is no information. The claim information has led to the idea that anything can be pawned off onto the unsuspecting public as druidry. The fact is, there is a great wealth of information, including archaeological sites, contemporary histories, and surviving practices, folk practices, and stories that's been documented for several centuries. However, there is no firsthand account of the ancient practices. There's no book written by a druid about his life. We've got no biographies or surveys from non-interested third parties living at the time. Obviously, if such works existed, they would be absolutely helpful. What we do have is a huge collection of circumstantial and biased information. However, even this type of information can be enough to make a case, but it requires a lot more work than we generally would like. The problem is that some people have taken this type of information, the circumstantial and biased information, and then used the bits and pieces that justify their particular beliefs, and then claimed that they are practicing the ancient religion of the Druids. Obviously, this type of silliness is absurd. You cannot get some silly notion in your head, then stalk a poorly written website or unsolicited document to find something buried in it to support the silly notion, and then label what you have and you have made up as druidry. But this is exactly what has happened in many cases. So let's take a look at what we do know about ancient druidry. Many people in the field consider a book by Peter Ellis that was published in 1994 under the title The Druids to be the definitive book on druidry. And I would recommend this book to anyone who wants to know more about ancient druidry. Now, drawing from several resources that I consider a well-sourced and well-sourced book by Peter Ellis, and websites that tell who they are from the organization's point of view, if you want to know what somebody believes, you ask them what they believe. So I've went to websites and all directly to the organizations that I talk about. The Druids, let's talk about some of the things that we do know, okay? The Druids were a subgroup of the Celts. They were most likely an upper caste. As members of this upper caste, naturally, they received more education than the average did. It also seems that they passed this education and caste status down to their children. In Celtic mythology, many heroes are described as the children of druids. And there were certainly female druids. So it was probably a status held by family. A lot of modern-day Celtic reconstructionists claim that the title, similar to priest or rabbi or imam. Now, this is not altogether unlikely. However, the druidae and the dryads that were written about by the Greeks seem to encompass more of a class of people from which those in leadership are chosen than anything else. The Greeks called female druids dryads, but there's very little indication that these dryads were the same as the mythological ones, the mythological creatures as dryads. There is absolutely no evidence of the Celts calling female druids dryads, even though there are attempts by some challenge pagans to make that claim. No evidence to support it. The similarity between the words dryad and druid are generally to be the result of having two words related to the same Proto-Indo-European root. This is probably the word for oak, and there is a distinct possibility that the second half of the word is the root word, which pertains to sea, didio. So, etymologically, those that claim that druid means oak seers might be onto something. But the importance of this is questionable, because within folklore, the rowan can be seen as the most important tree to the druids, the ancient druids, not the oak, the rowan. Other trees play an important part in what we do know, what little we do know of the religion. A lot of people claim that the druids were involved in human sacrifice. Julius Caesar claimed this. If any of the Celts practiced human sacrifice, it was a very rare occurrence. Some people claim that they killed once a year, and they based that on finds of a very few bodies in the peat moss that in the peat bogs that some people think appear to have been ritually slain. In actuality, it seems to have not happened nearly that often. And based on the condition of the bodies and the remnants of dying king story, Celtic lore, it was probably something that happened only in times of the greatest strife and then only willingly. It is much more likely, based on the evidence that we see archaeologically, that those few that we find went to sacrifice represent what we might call legitimate executions. Those who say that writings of human sacrifice are baseless propaganda seem to be unaware of the Roman lack of squeamishness in killing criminals, enemy warriors, and social undesirables. It's not that Caesar would have made something up like this completely with the desire to enrage against an enemy and done it only halfway. Caesar didn't do things halfway. It is more likely that he was relying on information from his sources. If Caesar get the Romans riled up, he probably would have talked about mass cannibalism and other things that are very prominent in Roman literature and used to describe enemies. We know that the Druids had knowledge of herbalism, astronomy, metaphysics, and leadership skills of more. There is absolutely no evidence that they had impossible to replicate technologies. But there is plenty of evidence that they were probably the most advanced physicians of their time. Even with their skills, their rituals, and their role as lore keepers in the Druids, holds that Druidry was not a profession. He claims it was a social caste, an educated elite. Now, I'd like to talk about two other groups of druids. For these two druids, I'm going to use the terms fraternal druid and modern druid. It's because of these two groups that there's a break in druidry. The connection of these two groups to historic Druidry is less than genuine than that of the Celtic Reconstructionists. There is evidence to support the theory that the lines between the classes, between the castes, were blurring even before the Romans or the Christians ever influenced the Druids. For this reason, many Celtic Reconstructionists do not use the title Druid at all. Even if the ancient society had never met an outside influence, the biggest chance is there would still be no contemporary Celtic Druids. They were going away even before the Romans arrived. Now, what suffices as a definition of Druid today is a very dramatic one, and it's full of a lot of personal prejudices. Now, going back to the terms, fraternal Druid and modern Druid, what is a fraternal Druid? This is a term used to indicate membership in a fraternal Druidic society. The term Druid used in this manner carries with it a little bit of body of time, fairly legitimate. The ancient order of the Druids was created in 1781. This is almost two centuries before the Celtic Reconstruction. But we have to remember that fraternal organizations very often have silly names. Being a member of a Druid fraternity does not make one a Druid in the classical sense any more than being a member of the Elks Club makes one an Elk. I know of very few of my Masonic friends that can carve stone. And I'm not sure that any lion has ever attended a Lions Club. Obviously, to hold other fraternal organizations to the same standard that many hold the fraternal associations to is just a little bit unfair. Since no Druids in the physical sense exist today, with the possible exception of since Druids that could have adopted the term for their educated elite, we're going to quit talking about the ancient Druids for right now. Let's stick to the Druids of the past 250 years or so. The early fraternal associations claiming the term Druid were primarily interested in the preservation of ancient languages, cultures, and folk ways. Now, this is not a large focus of a Reconstructionist movement today. The Reconstructionists seem to be more invested in erroneous ideas about the ancient Druids. The early fraternal associates used a very diverse collection of source materials ranging from archaeology to fiction. And then, as later organizations build on the earlier one, a lot of this false material of the past was transported to the present with the weight of time on it to get some credibility, resulting in some very serious disputes. So I'll take a break there, and I'll play a song. And then we're going to come back and talk about some of the mythology and what that means today. So if you'll give me a moment, as usual, I didn't pick out a song. So let's see what we're going to do tonight. Let's go back to some Dark the Bard. I always like to go back to Dark the Bard. So this song, Dark the Bard, Land, Sea, and Sky. So we're going to play that tonight. So enjoy the music. Do Dark the Bard, Land, Sea, and Sky. And then we'll do our nightly peace prayer. And then we'll do a little station business. And then we'll be back. Thanks for listening. And I'll be back on the other side.
When I feel the There is one power in the universe, and I am a perfect manifestation of that power. And as such, I pray for peace. I pray for love. I pray for stability. I pray for the nation where I live. I pray for the world. By my will, so mote it be, and it is so. Listening to the Spiritual Unity Radio Network, where we believe that all manifestations of the divine are valid. You had a choice, and you chose to spend time with us. Join us nightly at 10 p.m. Eastern Time for a wide variety of programming. If you miss one of our shows, there are plenty of places to catch up. Every show is archived at www.blogtalkradio.com/CERN. Look for the on-demand shows. They are available as a free podcast download on iTunes and now available free on the TuneIn Radio application and website. Follow us on Twitter at SURN_ORG and on Facebook. Each of our shows has a Facebook presence so that you can keep abreast with what is going on. If you have any moans, groans, gripes, bitches, complaints, or compliments, you may send those to the station management by emailing surn.org@gmail.com. On Thursday nights, Onyx and Terry discuss questions that have been sent in by you, the listeners. If you have a question you want them to discuss, please send it to the station's email address. If you'd like credit for the question, please let us know in the email. For more information about our network, please click over to www.spiritualunityradionetwork.org. Your support is greatly appreciated, and we humbly thank you for that.
You're listening to the Spiritual Unity Radio Network. Thanks for sticking around. And now, back to the show.
Welcome back. And I am Onyx. You are listening to the Soapbox Witch. We are talking about jewelry. Thank you for joining me. In the first half of the show, we talked about a book by Peter Ellis, and we talked about some of the ideas in it. We talked about that there, at least contemporarily, in today's world, there are basically two kinds of druids. Outside of those that are reclaiming the name, there will be Celtic Reconstructionists that are reclaiming the name, and those two types of druids I am calling fraternal modern druids. So we ended before the break talking a little bit about the fraternal druids and some reconstructionists. Now, let's talk about the older fraternal druids, the ones that the order started back, you know, in the 1700s. Much of the mythology that in the druids and the Celts that these early revivalists were using had no bearing whatsoever on their rites and beliefs, because their rites were not those of a religion or a religious people at all. Regardless of what some people would like to think, the members of these fraternal druids associations were Christian, and they were laden heavily with nationalism. They were not followers of any form of paganism, modern, ancient, or otherwise. So those bizarre claims that people have, such as Winston Churchill, I got Winston-Salem on the mind, pardon that slip. People like Winston Churchill was a druid, is based on their relationship with these fraternal organizations. These claims are absolute ridiculous. The druids of those organizations, those druidic organizations that we're talking about during this time, more in common with the Elks and the Masons than they do with Wiccans, witches, or modern druids. Now, we venture into a story where I've donned my fireproof underwear. Go ahead. It's RevOnyxHP at LadyOfTheCircle.org. Write it down. RevOnyxHP at LadyOfTheCircle.org. Now, if we talk about the definitions of druid the way we're discussing it, it should be very obvious that I believe that independent people who pick up the term druid are not using the term correctly. In all of its history, both ancient and modern, the term druid brings with it a sense of social recognition. This is either the membership in an educated elite of a specific people, or the membership in an organization. To be alone and using the term seems very far from the context in which it has been used throughout its history. Now, if these solos or individuals are using the term to mean seers of oaks, I guess this might be okay. I guess I can see engineering of beliefs from the etymology of that term, especially if it so happened to be in the context of, say, a Jupiter-centric Romano-Celtic Reconstructionist. So anyone who is listening, who uses the term, and who is not a part of a group, I ask you to explain to me why you chose that term. RevOnyxHP at LadyOfTheCircle.org. The ability to explain why is a very big deal to me, because it speaks very heavily to the usage of a label. So let's move along to modern druidry. Let's start by discussing the ADF. This organization sometimes referred to as a Druid fellowship, actually takes its three Irish Gaelic words, which I cannot properly, but translate to our own Druidism. It was founded in 1983 by Isaac Bonowitz. He describes the organization as, quote, a network of interested in legitimate research about the ancient Druids, Indo-European colleagues, end quote. Now, after the establishment of the ADS, it quickly grew into its own sect of paganism. It has its own training programs, its own rituals, and much, much more. Unlike other Druid groups, the ADF remains an independent entity with its own set of standards. Among the standards of the ADF is a vital critique of revisionism and historical fantasy. In reference to critique, Bonowitz says on the ADF webpage, and I quote, the goddesses and gods do not need us to tell lies on their behalf, nor do we understand the ways of our paleo-pagan predecessors by indulging in romantic fantasies, no matter how politically correct or emotionally satisfying they may be, end quote. The bottom line is the ADF focuses on creating a new druidry of their own. The Order of Bards and Druids, known as the OBR, focuses on creating or preserving the spirit of the fraternal druidic organizations of the past. They also focus on finding the fine line between the horrible scholarship of the past and the great works people are doing today. In general, OBOD tries to work within a fraternal framework similar to what they see in centuries-old organizations that they claim to be descended from. Now, in this vein, OBOD members share beliefs and more as members of the community or culture. In other words, they share their beliefs more because they're a member of a community or culture rather than memories. I'm tired tonight. Forgive me. Rather than members of a shared religion. OBOD has members of religions ranging from Christianity to Wicca and everything in between. One other organization that I would like to mention, although I don't know a whole heck of a lot about, is the British Druid Order. They seem to be more focused on developing or redeveloping British spirituality, rather than on the fraternal work of the OBOD or the more generalized scholarship of the ADF. But they do seem to have a tangential relationship to the OBOD. If you study modern Druidry, I believe you'll find that all the other legitimate groups fit into the category with either the ADF or the OBOD. Celts and Druids. Let's talk about them. The relationship between the Celts and the Druids can be summed up by saying that the classical Druids are a set within the big set of Celts. and the modern Druids comprise a sect that includes members of a Celtic sect, but not the whole of it, and that Celtic is not a defining quality of this sect. In other words, while the ancient Druids are very much Celts, the modern Druids base their membership on shared beliefs, training, and goals, which transcend tribe, race, ethnicity, and sometimes even religion. A classical Druid would have been a Celt, probably part of the educated social and economic class of the Celts. And it's likely that he would have been trained in some sort of formal manner as a member of that social group. However, a modern Druid is a Druid only by virtue of membership within a Druid organization, which usually requires some training, but rarely, if ever, involves a social status or birth caste. Now, it's a general consensus among historians and academia that the Druid class, the Druids, appear to be as a social class well before Roman influence began to affect life. As I said earlier, it is not unlikely, given the evidence that we have, that if no one had come and influenced the Celts, and that they had continued to without outside interference, their modern culture still be without Druids as it is today, at least in the classical sense of the term Druid. The Celts were and still are a group of people defined by a shared culture and ethnicity. But the Druids were a specific subgroup of those people, slowly being phased out before the time when Celtic culture began to be heavily influenced by Roman culture and eventual Christianity. Think about this. The Romans came before the Christians. And before the Romans came, the Druids were already dying out. Well into dying out, well into being phasing out, well into the blurring the lines between the Druid class and the regular Celtic classes, people. Now, if you think about it, this speaks directly to the inaccurate history surrounding St. Patrick and the Druids. The distinction between them then becomes the distinction between members of a single ethnicity and culture and members of a clearly defined social caste and or profession. And it's this distinction that allows some modern Druids to use their term accurately, while those attaching the adjective Celtic that can't run fast enough to avoid them are in error. Everything's Celtic this, Celtic that, Celtic this. I'll get on that soapbox on another day. One is about membership and something too difficult that is very difficult to define, but more than the subject and concept of membership in an organization. Okay? And the other is defined as a membership in a culture, Druids and Celts. To be a Celt would be a member of a culture, which is very difficult to define in and of itself, is something that members of that culture are very capable of recognizing. I'm about to tick other people off once again. If I haven't done it already, yourself. So what are the differences and similarities between modern Druidry and Wicca? Both began as a sort of reconstruction of a previous religion. Both Druidry and Wicca were plagued with the very simple fact that that ancient religion just wasn't what their founders thought it was. Consider this metaphor. These two, Druidry and Wicca, have been unto two oak trees, sprouting from two acorns that fell side by side. At first, they were two separate trees, growing from the same ground. However, they were so close together that after a while they fused, but still show signs of distinct entities, with parts of their root structure unique to and parts by the new conjoined entity. So there's a similarity in the basis of the two religions that I feel like I should mention. This is the result of shared roots in theosophy, spiritualism, and a result of the relationship between Ross Nichols, who is the founder of the OBOD, and Gerald Gardner. There is a similarity in terminology, as well as the liturgical calendar. And it does not surprise me that early in Wicca, we see the names used by Margaret Murray for the eight high holy days replaced by the ones used by the OBOD, even if they are by the Wiccans. You who don't know who Margaret Murray is, Margaret Murray wrote Witch Cult in Western Europe. It was a travesty, an absolute travesty of research, but it was considered to be the go-to book for information. Yeah, if you're still thinking like Murray, you're thinking wrong. Because about 98% or more of the in that book are wrong, historically and archaeologically. There is an early flow of ideas and concepts between the two, which is attributed to different phenomena by different researchers. And I'm not going to get that far into all the different phenomena, all the different reasons why there was a flow of ideas and concepts back and forth between them. Now, at the same time, there was a need for these two trees to grow independently. During what is now usually referred to as middle modern Wicca, which occurred roughly between the 1960s and the 1980s, the two grew in very different directions. Wicca, focusing on magic and becoming associated with the self-improvement movement, and Druidry, focusing more on ecology. Both straying from the previous path of flawed Reconstructionism. This weaving, together then apart, would be brought back together again as the concept of a broader pagan movement began to take hold. The exchange of ideas brought more ecology and Celtic imagery into Wicca, and more self-improvement and ceremonial magic into Druidry. It is largely, this whole thing is largely responsible for those within the pagan movement who want to define paganism as the practice of their great spirituality. Essentially, these people are defining paganism as a whole by these syncretic witches who take on the additions as definitive. The fact that these things exist in the original core theology seems to be meaningless and completely lost on them. Now, Wicca and Druidry move away from each other as of their respective reconstructions begin to unravel. Then they come back when new research shows them to be siblings, and the pattern continues repeatedly until we are where now. With modern Druidry heavily flavored by modern Wicca and by many proponents of each claim no relationship to others claim there's no difference. To a soul, this sort of religious incest is discomforting. Some people theorize we will see more development along the line of a third path. And this would either be Druidic Wicca or Wiccan Druidry. But no doubt, many people just simply call it neo-paganism. Slap a big label on it. I believe that you cannot study difference between and Druidry except in those groups that have existed with little influence or interference between the two. They have to pretty much have existed in a void because there's been so much crossover between the two over the years that you can't tell where one ends and the other one begins sometimes. In the nearly three decades of my experience within the modern pagan movement, I have not seen even one group whose claim to complete isolation has been proven valid. So, what does that mean? I believe my contribution is that Wicca and Druidry, as it is practiced today, are at its very essence the same entity with some cosmetic differences. Now, I'm not saying that Druid groups and Wiccan groups are exactly the difference in focus, while primarily serving as a difference, is still a completely valid one. And the differences in with liturgy, the way that the rituals of liturgy are significant. The union between the two is not in practice, although there are similarities. The differences result in or can come from culture and cosmology, especially where both end up finding flaws in their original cosmology. This is where it comes from. Okay, this is where let me think for a second how I want to put this. They're very similar in some areas, and where they are very similar is because when they start finding flaws, original cosmology, which was different, and then they go mining the very same information, filling the gaps and flaws. So you can see where, when the cracks start appearing in their original cosmology because of flawed history, flawed records, flawed assumptions, when the cracks start appearing and getting bigger, they go scrambling, looking to third party for information to fill in those gaps and flaws. where you had two separate entities, Druidry and Wicca, based on flawed history. So when the cracks start working, they're both looking to fill those gaps. And they're going to the same third parties to get information to fill those gaps. So over time, they become more and more aligned. While Ossetron and Reconstructionism are tangentially related to the pagan culture movement, tangentially, Wicca and Druidry are inseparable parts of it. And it's this similarity that leads to definitions of pagan that are merely definitions of Wicca and Druidry. That's a whole new set of problems that are associated with these kind of flaws. That when you ask somebody what is a pagan, they'll give you definitions of Druidry. This causes a lot of problems. The error enters the equation because people see the similarities between Wicca and Druidry as accidental, or the relationship between survivors of a common enemy, and they do not see it as a deliberate transfer of data from one group of people to another. When we understand and we recognize that deliberate transfer of data happened, it still happens to a point, it then becomes easier to define the differences by seeing where the commonalities came from and how the individual faiths, Wicca and Druidry, reacted to that new information that we talked about that came from the third party and is used to fill in the gaps. Let's go back for a moment and think about the metaphor of the fused oak tree. Regardless of the root structure of history, there's still only one plant. If you chop half of the trunk, the whole thing will die. But even in this union, the newer branches are completely separate. And if one were to fall, it's unlikely that they all would perish. I invite everyone to research what I've said. Go to the sources that I mentioned. I mentioned The Druids by Peter Ellis, published in 1994. And the information about the specific organizations, the OBOD, the ADF, and the British Druid Order, I got from those organizations' web pages, easily Googled. I will fully admit to being biased in everything I say, especially when it comes to opinion. Unless somebody is quoting verifiable data, let's say I'm looking at a table and I say 2 times 2 is 4. That's not bias, because it's verifiable. But unless somebody's talking about this kind of data, absolute, unadulterated, verifiable data, it is absolutely impossible for anybody to avoid being biased. I'm biased. And you are too. I invite you to write me. If you don't like what I said, so be it. Think about it. If you don't like it, tell me so. Tell me why. Support your reasons. If you consider yourself a Druid, You're not a member of a group, so there's no social contact. Tell me why you chose the name Druid. Explain it to me. Tell me. HP at LadyInTheCircle.org. During this episode, I mentioned a term, original core theology. What does that term mean? That means what a particular sect believed at its very core in its original state. Original core theology. On Saturday, during LCO on BTR, I'm going to talk about the original core theology of Wicca. I invite you to please join me for that episode. I believe it will be very informative. Consider, in order to plot a course to an unknown point, you first have to know where you are and from where you come. I'll tell you where we are today. And within theology, core theology, modern core theology, and where Wiccan theology started, the original core theology, is not the same. You will be surprised, or you may be surprised, as some of those that were involved in the original theology of Wicca. I want to thank you for joining me tonight. I hope something you said will challenge you to think. Even if you don't agree with me, then let me know. Let me know. Write to me. I see a couple of comments in the chat room that I'd like to engage before we close the show. You missed half of the show. I see a lot of the stuff that you're talking about. I'm not going to quote it on the air, and I apologize for that in the archives. But Chris, if you will go back to the archives and listen to the first half of the show, you'll understand where I come from on this. So on a lot of the stuff that you're talking about. And if you have any questions, please, and email me. Okay? That was RevonixHP at LadyOfTheCircle.org. I look forward from it. Now, Saturday night, LCO on BTR, 10 p.m., right here on Spiritual Unity Radio Network. We're going to talk about the original core theology of Wicca. If anything that I have said tonight challenges you to think, then it's a good thing. I've given you some data to think about. I've given you some resources to check. I'll give you my opinion on some things. Go do the research yourself. Make your own opinions. The beauty of it is we don't have to think a lot. And I don't care if you think like me. I just want you to think. Because that's the name of the game, folks. That's the name of the game. Tune in every night on Spiritual Unity Radio Network. for exciting shows, 10 p.m. Eastern Time, all the time. Follow us on Twitter, SURN_ORG. These shows post on my timeline. You're welcome to add me as a friend if you wish. I'd be happy to have you following the list. If you want to find out more about me or the organization that I am the chief priest for, please click on over to www.org. Another project that I'm involved in is called International Pagan Radio. And International Pagan Radio is a 24-hour-a-day, 7-day-a-week streaming radio station hosted on a live 365 backbone. You can find out more about IPR by going to www.internationalpaganradio.com. I invite you to go over and check it out. Come by the Facebook pages of all of the shows. Come by the CERN Facebook page. Like us, follow us, so that you know what's going on. We are evolving, folks. Evolved as we evolve. Thank you so much for your time. Thank you so much for your listening. And all things, may you blessed be.
Thanks for listening to the Spiritual Unity Radio Network. Join us 7 nights a week for exciting programming covering a variety of expressions of faith. And remember, all manifestations of the divine are equally valid.